Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 77 of the Weekly Long Box. I'm Leonard, joined by Todd. Todd, how are we doing today?
I'm pretty good. A little sunburned, but otherwise, I'm fine.
Yes, you had mentioned on Twitter yesterday that you were feeling under the weather and that you were thinking about holding off on the show this week.
Yeah, but then there was a threat of somebody coming in and taking my place and talking about Grant Morrison and spoiler. So I was like, I think I could pull through.
Well, I just like how many people decided to jump in your grave the minute you said that you were a little bit under the weather.
I guess this is a sweet gig, so everybody's lining up. But when you're the best, you know, you got to beat the best or something like that.
It's to be the man, and then you say woo real loud. You've got to beat the man.
All right, to be the man, Doctor Who, You got to beat the man. Gotcha, that's how it goes.
There actually was more Doctor Who talk this weekend. I can't escape it.
Well, he's legendary. Legendary.
So, I actually, I know Todd's living the life with his sunburnedness, but I actually am, I don't know, under the weather, not feeling well, dealing with a lot of concerns here, a lot of coughing, just a lot of a lot of something. You could probably hear it in my voice.
Yeah, but you know what? It sounds deeper and sultrier.
I'll say this. I couldn't tell if you were really sick or not. And I'm like, we've soldiered on before when one of us are under the weather. But if both of us were not feeling well, it'd make for an interesting show.
Oh, I would love to get all NyQuil'd up with you and do a podcast.
Because I don't think either of us would not do the show. Like, we did a show on, like, Christmas Eve and 4th of July. Like, we're hardcore.
We are. We don't give up. We never forget and never surrender with us, man.
That's right. So I know this was a not as a direct result, but by a partial result of me being on the road and traveling with Chikara this past weekend. It allowed me to miss both Free Comic Book Day and Iron Man 3 on opening weekend. So we will not be talking about Iron Man 3. I know some of our listeners may have been speaking very freely about it on Twitter, and that's on me. You know, there's a whole time frame of when you're allowed to talk about spoilers or not talk about spoilers. You know, hey, to each their own. We will be probably talking about Iron Man 3 next week on the show, so if you have not gotten a chance to see it, but I think that maybe I'm the only one who hasn't seen it yet.
I'm pretty sure with the money it's making, yeah.
It was the second biggest opening weekend ever. Obviously, number one was the first Avengers movie that came out this past year. And I'm excited to see Iron Man 3. I'm very sad that I didn't get a chance to see it this weekend. I still know very little outside of the unfortunate little bit that I saw on Twitter the other day.
You sure you're going to get to see it?
I'm working real hard to make sure I get a chance to see it.
I want odds, baby. What are the odds?
I would not bet on it.
See, I'll bet on anything.
With it being as busy as a weekend as it is, it's my buddy Pete's birthday. Ooh. It's Mother's Day.
Yes.
It's my mom's birthday.
Ooh.
And it's April's birthday.
Wow. Wow.
I might have said on this show last week or in the past, in the 31 days in May, I think I have friends or very close acquaintance or family members who have birthdays in 25 days in the month of May.
Wow. That's yes. A sweet May.
Ugh.
And then doesn't yours fall in there somewhere?
Allegedly.
Allegedly?
There's speculation as to what day my birthday is.
See, I always figured you, like me, were summoned,
mm-hmm.
So I don't know if we have a birthday.
I know when my twin brother's birthday is.
Hmm.
But my birthday is of a questionable date.
But if one of you was born at like 11:59 and one of you was born at 12:01, you could have different birthdays.
No, it's not like that.
Gotcha. Just checking. You never know.
So you did obviously get a chance to see Iron Man 3.
Yes, I did.
And obviously, I'm going to guess that you enjoyed it. I know, as you know, as we go forward, Todd got a chance to see it at our local one of our local theaters. Instead of doing a midnight show, does a 10 o'clock show on a Thursday night.
Yes, and I love that. I love that idea.
And I'm going to say this. My plan is to do that with you guys for Man of Steel.
We are setting things into motion for that. As soon as we're done with Star Trek, which is next week, I think, then we're going to see get a head count for Man of Steel. So,
yeah. Star Trek, I will also be out of town for. So,
Now, you know that's the Dixon Theater, right? That's so
yes,
far away
yes,
from
I
your
do.
House. Okay. Yeah, we'll put you down. We'll put you down as one.
All right. Just one. Unfortunately, somebody has to stay and watch the baby.
Hey, bring the baby.
I'm not one of those folks.
Good. But yeah, I saw it. I don't want to say too much about it. Basically, I'll just go with I liked it.
Okay.
That's all I can say.
Perfect. That's more than enough information.
Yes.
So I also missed Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to go to the store and pick up any of the books. I'm sure our retailer was very nice and threw me some. So I'm sure you were at the shop all day.
I got there after like maybe 1 o'clock. Because I have to work until noon, so I came home, got a shower, and then went down. But it was crazy, because not only was it Free Comic Book Day, but because, you know, the comic shop is in Scranton, and the Office TV show is closing down, and it's set in Scranton, they had the cast of The Office there in downtown. So it was like, they say 10,000 people showed up at some point. I think that number's a little high, but I looked down on the square, which you could see from the shop, and the streets were just, they had some of them closed off. It was just amazing, you know, like just the head count. But that brought in a lot of people that normally wouldn't come in, because people from out of town for Free Comic Book Day. So you had your normal people, which worked out well because they had the parking situation and the roads down great. So the regulars could get down there, and the people came in. By 2 o'clock, I want to say, 2:30, Dave was out of most of the new comics.
Wow.
And he was dipping into, like, you know how you've seen he has stuff left over at the end of the day on Free Comic Book Day, or he has some other books that, you know, he could put that he ordered heavy on or something like that. By the end of the day, it was all panel on the table, pretty much. I don't think there was anything left.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it was. And then he had big sales and, you know, a lot of people in, and, you know, it was a big day. He said, I think he said he broke his record for Free Comic Book Day. Smashed it, actually.
Smashed it.
Yeah.
Well, good for him. Hang on.
You know what would be great in these situations? A mute button.
A mute button that works, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to get as far away from the microphone as I possibly can when I have to cough, which is going to be often during the show. Mm-hmm. I completely forgot about the Office thing happening this weekend in Scranton as well. So as I'm driving down to North Carolina, I see a bunch of people talking or leaving. Going from North Carolina to Georgia, I see a bunch of people talking about the Office thing, and I'm like, is that this weekend? Where is that? Oh, my goodness. I'm like, it's going to be a madhouse in Scranton with this and Free Comic Book Day. I know a buddy of mine, Ed, his thought was that he was going to try to get down there a little bit after the lunch break time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he attempted to do so, as soon as he saw the Office stuff, he just turned around and went home.
See, I'm a braver soul. But I went in and I ended up getting my, he has a 3-book, limit, so people a little bit can get something. I ended up getting the Walking Dead one, the Star Wars one, and the Infinity one, so.
Okay.
If you want, I can lend any of those to you.
No, I think I'm okay, because I think a lot of them Comixology put up.
Oh, did they really? That's cool.
Yeah, a good chunk of them.
How much were they?
They were free on Comixology.
Wow. On Comixology and at the shop. That's a double free.
I don't think they put them up until like after the weekend. I think they put them up on Monday.
Which is cool, because that's the whole point, is to bring, you know, people into the shop, and it did. So that's cool.
Now, did you get a chance to see anybody that hasn't been to the shop in a while? You know, I guess any interesting stories, any interesting behavior? There's always interesting folks at the comic book shop.
There is always interesting folks. Other than the person shoplifting, there wasn't much.
Really?
Yeah. Somebody, I guess, like, you know, you're only supposed to get a couple comics. I think they put some in their bag, like extras, and then grabbed maybe something off the rack. But, you know, that was, you know, put everything back and get out kind of a thing.
You didn't have to tackle anyone?
No, I was mostly sitting around watching, talking with Scott Beatty, who's a writer. He's done Ming the Merciless. He's done some, trying to think of what Batman books, what were the anthology Batman books? They weren't the Legend. Maybe it was the Legends of the Dark Knight. And, couple other books. He did Flash Gordon, not Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers for Dynamite. He was there signing, and he had a bunch of the he sold everything off his table.
That's
he
awesome.
Brought a bunch of stuff. Yeah, at the end he had a big sale. He took, like, he had a short box of comics that he had left, but everything that was like really like quality stuff, gone. So good for him.
Well, that's good that it was a success, and I hope everyone in your local area had a successful Free Comic Book Day, whether you are a store owner or a store attendee. Hopefully it was a good experience for you.
Yeah. And I'm sorry you didn't get any free comics.
No, it's okay. I'll live, you know. I know. Nothing's better than free comics, but again, somehow I will soldier on.
With that cough, I'm not sure, but anyway.
Anyway. So, I don't like to bring this up very often. I used to in the past. But I do just want to mention this. The numbers, the sales numbers for April had come out over the last couple of days. And DC saw, like, their biggest drop in the longest time.
Yeah. It's interesting because I guess, like, maybe the novelty of the new 52 is wearing off a little bit after a year and three quarters, I think.
Right. So, you know, there was a lot of, you know, Batman's still number one, of course. Justice League is slipping a little bit. Batman and Red Robin bumped up into the top 10 for the first time, but a majority of the top 10 these days is all the Bendis, Age of Ultron, Guardians of the Galaxy, Uncanny X-Men stuff, Jupiter's Legacy, which we talked about last week, made it into the top 10, as did Walking Dead, which is pretty awesome to see two indie books in the top 10 sales.
That is really cool, you know, because that quality, you know, seems to rise to the top, and that's what I believe has happened here. I like Jupiter's Legacy, and I don't know, we both kind of like Walking Dead, I think.
Yes, and for the first time in a while, because it's always in the top 10, that first trade, the evergreen trade of Walking Dead, it's always in the top 10. Since there wasn't any huge releases this past month, it was the number one trade for the month of April.
Good for Kirkman.
A book that's, what, like 6-7 years old?
Oh, God, it's got to be, because it's almost at 110. So I'd say it might even be older. Oh, it did double ship there for a little bit, didn't it?
Right, but then it also fell behind for a little bit to kind of, you know, even things out.
The way I always do it is 120 issues is 10 years to me. So I probably think we're closer to 10 than 7.
Mm-hmm.
I think
we probably are closer to 10. But you know what I'm saying, though. It's a book that's been out for a long time, and to see it still as number one on the trades is pretty awesome to show that there's still interest, there's still people getting into The Walking Dead.
I see Sandman getting a bump when the Neil Gaiman Sandman issues start coming out again.
Yeah, don't they have, like, new, or is that already out, where it was, like, the new, like, slipcase thing for the new trade dress of them?
That is done with. Now we're on the annotated Sandman.
Okay.
And we're also going to get a Sandman omnibus, which is going to be like half the run, and then another omnibus, which is going to be the second half. So, and they almost get me every time.
Yeah, almost.
But after the Absolutes, I stopped.
Yeah, I think I need one more of the Absolutes, and then I'm done.
Do you have the Death one?
I do.
Oh, cool.
Yes. So, just moving along here in the news, there's not a ton of news to talk about. I did want to mention that the newest Brian K. Vaughan, Marcos Martin digital book, Private Eye, we had talked about it here. It came out today. I did not get a chance to read it as it came out in the middle of the day. I just downloaded it, and I am hoping to read it to talk about next week.
Yeah, I haven't gotten a chance. I really enjoyed the first one, and I just saw that, you know, when you sent me the note that that it's out, I'm looking forward to reading it again. I thought it was interesting, like my first real digital comic, and I really enjoyed the way, you know, that they did it. I thought it suits it well for, you know, they know how to work the art for a digital comic compared to, you know, a print comic. And I thought that was really cool. And I want to see if they have any other surprises up their sleeves with that kind of stuff.
Right. And it's right through their site, which is Panel Syndicate. I'll put the link in the show notes. No iTunes, no Comixology, no anything else. and it's a sort of pay-as-you-want thing. You want to pay a buck, you want to pay $2, you want to pay nothing, that's up to you.
$1,500.
$1,500, sure.
It'd be nice, but I don't know if anybody's gonna.
No, I don't think, you know, who knows? You never know. They might have a huge fan out there that just wants to see more done, and they figure it'll be their $1,500 that gets so, like, the whole story completed.
Yeah. That'd be pretty cool.
So, one of the other things of note that I wanted to mention, it just went live on Monday, and that is Greg Rucka has a Kickstarter project up for his digital comic that he's been doing over the last couple of years, Lady Saver and the Pirates of the Ineffable Ether, Volume 1. It's available digitally for free, but this is to get it in a fancy hardcover slipcase edition. And this will be another one that we put the links up to in the notes. It's a very nice-looking book. I'll be honest, it's something I haven't read digitally because I've been waiting for something like this to come along in print. And here it is. You can get the hardcover for $30. Right off the top, you can get the digital edition, so you have it forever as a PDF. And then there's even bigger goals, as you'll see there. If you're a store owner, you can have Greg Rucka and the artist, who you will recognize his art, Rick Burchett. He's done a lot of the animated stuff for DC, like the animated comics.
Mm-hmm.
And his style is very, very nice. I think it fits the story that they're telling about pirates and, you know, Old West and that sort of stuff. And Greg Rucka is a great, great writer. He's one of those guys. I enjoy supporting his stuff whenever I can.
Me too. I'm a big fan of Greg Rucka. This is actually the first that I'm hearing of this project. I have to look over, you know, the goals and the what they have there to see what I might want, but I could see me definitely going for something like this. I didn't know this is what he was doing right now. I knew he was doing something, but I didn't know he was doing a digital thing, and now a cool slipcase edition. You know, I'd be all over that. So once I nail down what goal I want to grab, I'll probably pick something up.
Right, and there's been, he didn't do this, but there was another Kickstarter project that I just saw the other day as well. Amy Reeder, who has done, and I'm just pulling up her stuff to mention this Kickstarter project, and I like to see Kickstarter folks doing new and innovative things with their Kickstarters. You know, we talked about it before with Baltasar and Franco, with how they did a lot of their incentives as like, hey, it's going to only be up for a couple minutes. You're going to bid on an eBay auction style and go from there.
Mm-hmm.
So their new project, which is called Rocket Girl, they had a separate one where it was the first 100 people that pledged an early bird special. It was you get the first issue. It's signed and numbered with a different cover. Plus, you get an exclusive print, and then there's another $10 one with a different exclusive print. And, you know, to see those early bird special sort of things, to bump the number up quicker, I think we're going to see a lot more in the future.
Well, that's any way to get noticed. That's what you got to do. And,
yes.
You know, make it fun and interesting. And, you know, like, I have to look and see what that is. But that's a great way to at least get me to, like, oh, you know, if you get in early, you could, you know, get something special. So at least, you know, I'll go look at it. Because some of these Kickstarters, I'm like, oh, I hear about them, but they have 30 days. So, or you can, I guess, make it as longer as you want.
Yes.
But it's like, oh, you know, 10 days in, I'll check it. Or get close to the end, I might grab something. But, you know, the more they do these incentives, it's like, oh, I better go look at it as soon as I hear about it. So
what you could do is you could favorite a project or star it, if you will, and then it'll remind you 2 days before it's over.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Yes.
See what I learn every day, every day.
It's an educational podcast.
It is. I think we should get a grant.
Certainly. So I think that about does it in the news.
Yeah, I don't think I have any more to mention. But I think this would be a good time to mention our sponsor, who without them, the weekly long box tower wouldn't be able to broadcast its tens of watts of power. And that is Bake Me a Wish. You can order cakes, have them sent directly to your door or a loved one's door. They have many great flavors. I had the chocolate mousse tort cake, and I'm still thinking about it. I have friends who ask me when I'm getting another one. There's a couple other flavors I want to try. They have like strawberry shortcake and vanilla bean cake. I'm like, that's good. the great flavors. But if you're not into cake, and I don't know who wouldn't be, because that wouldn't be human. They also have gourmet brownies and cookies, which I think are really cool. And you can mix and match the flavors and get just cookies or brownies, or mix cookies and brownies. How crazy is that, Leonard?
That is crazy. And if you don't like cakes, then I don't want nothing to do with you.
Exactly. You're not human. You're probably like an alien or something. But you get the order in, you can get it sent next day. And if you're in a jam, you know, that's good to get out of a jam. I've never been in one because I'm a good guy, but I know you've gotten in trouble with April a couple of times. To send a cake overnight, you could smooth it all over with that.
That's right. And as we'd mentioned before, Mother's Day is coming up. There's still time to order.
Oh, yeah, Mother's Day. And they have other, you know, occasions. You can look down the list. And it comes with a little topper that's made out of chocolate that gives the message. The message is edible. How awesome is that?
And you know, we were mentioning before who doesn't like cakes. There's people that I know that prefer pie to cake and lament that they should eliminate cakes altogether.
That's crazy talk.
And to them I say good day.
Good day to you, sir.
That's right. That's about as angry about it as I get.
Okay, calm down. Calm down. let's breathe in and we'll get back to the show.
Yes, let's get back to comics. So there's digital freebie stuff available this week from Comixology. Marvel with their usual weekly specials. They have Secret Avengers number 16, which, if I'm not mistaken, was the last issue that Warren Ellis did, or maybe a fill-in issue by Warren Ellis on that. The 12 number 1 by J. Michael Straczynski, and Uncanny X-Men number 410. All those are available for free, as well as Bandette from Monkey Brain Comics by Paul Tobin and Colleen Coover. That is free, available to you on Comixology for, I think, another 2 months. So if for some reason you've missed it the last couple of weeks we've mentioned it, or you're new to the show, it's waiting there for you to read.
Yeah.
So that covers those. Where would you like to begin with the books that we read last week?
Would you like to start with a brand new number one called The Movement?
Yes, that was both of ours, to my surprise, your most anticipated book from last week, as was mine, The Movement by Gail Simone, a longtime, favorite of the show, with art by Freddie Williams, Amanda Connor on covers. And, you know, we were led originally to believe that this was a book about the 99% fighting corrupt, greedy type folks, and even a lot of the solicitation text leads us to believe that as well. It's a little bit different than what we originally led to believe, but let's get your thoughts on it first there, Todd.
It was interesting. I'm the same way. I went into it with a different thinking that I was going to get what you just described. As a matter of fact, I was at the shop and a couple of people were like, "Oh, The Movement, it's about this and it's about that." I'm like, "No, it's not." Mm-hmm. They're like, "Oh, do you know?" I'm like, "Yeah, I read it. It was interesting." I don't know how to explain it. It seems like a group of people who are looking out against, like you said, not maybe the 1%, but corruption in general. And they're trying to make this little town where, you know, that they can't come and there's people with powers. I'm not really sure what's going on or how to explain this. To tell you the truth, it's an interesting concept. It didn't completely wow me or amaze me, but it didn't throw me off either. So in reading it, I want to see what she's up to, so I'm going to give it more time. But I was a little confused. Like I said, I think it's because I was expecting one thing and got another.
Right. It's essentially, the premise of it is there are these superheroed kids, these superpowered kids. They're all new characters, as far as I can tell. We are going to be getting some re-debuts of some previous pre-52 characters in some future issues. But they're essentially, what Todd said is, it's not so much against like the greedy and the corporate types. It's more or less against the corrupt police.
Right. I think it may go from there, too, but that's where we're at right now.
Right, and then there's a character who appears who, you know, may have superpowers, depends on what they claim those superpowers do, and there's a tease in the beginning of who the movement is, and that may not be correct, I guess. There might be two sets of forces out trying to impose their will on this section of the city.
Right. Like I said, that's the better way to explain it. You did it better than I could because, like I said, I was just a little let down. I don't know. I expected more. I'm still equating everything Gail does that should be Secret Six. So,
right. She has a very tough act to follow.
Right. So it wasn't that. But you know, like I said, I'm going to give it a few more issues to see what she's up to.
All right. So I'm with you too. Again, I wasn't blown away, but it was still an interesting enough concept for me to stick with the book.
Mm-hmm.
So just moving on, we're going to talk about a lot of books because a ton of stuff came out. It's one of these 5-week months. I might have lamented last week, or 5 Wednesday months, where I lamented where we get like a small week and then tons of big weeks. And I wish everything would just be more spread out evenly.
Right.
But this was a big week.
Yes, it was, and a lot of good books. I mean, if we wanted to, I could probably double the amount of books we're going to talk about this week.
So the next one I want to talk about is Superior Spider-Man number 9.
Something happened in there?
Something happened in this book. When I went to the shop, this was the book that was getting the most scuttlebutt online after the episode went live last week. And I went to the shop, and I asked Todd if he had read anything yet. And he goes, yes, I read Superior Spider-Man number 9. And the tease on this is who will emerge as the one true Superior Spider-Man. That's what the solicitation text says on this. This is what it says in the preview. And this book is essentially a battle inside the mind of Peter Parker for the control of Peter Parker Spider-Man between Dr. Octopus and Peter Parker.
Yep. And I thought it was very interesting. I thought it was cool the way, you know, Doc Ock and Peter, the way they thought of each other in their minds and the way they thought of, you know, themselves, and a few revelations, you know, where, you know, Peter tweaks at Doc Ock, and then, you know what, Doc Ock tweaks back a couple of times. He's like, and you know I'm right. And I thought, like, it was that parts of it was really cool. I thought, you know, it's ingenious in the way, you know, when Doc would attack him, you know, maybe he might forget this part of his life and he was trying to put it all back together. For a battle on the, you know, the we could call it the astral plane of the mind or whatever it is, that kind of stuff, I was like, oh, this could be cliche. And I think Dan Slott did a really good job of not making it, you know, the run-of-the-mill mental battle that it could have been.
Right, I'm with you on that. I really enjoyed this issue. I wasn't as surprised or outraged as apparently everyone else was. The world, as usual with everything that's been going on lately, with the Dan Slott Spider-Man going all the way back to issue 698 when all this Peter Parker, Doc Ock stuff began, is there's people who love it and there's people who hate it. There's no people in the middle ground. I loved it. Mm-hmm. I'm with this for the ride. I'm good for shaking things up. And I was wrong because I speculated that we were going to get to a point where Peter and Doc Ock were going to have an uneasy alliance and be working together in the near future. That does not seem to be the case.
No, it doesn't.
And I also wanted to say that I know that you are not a fan of the artists that usually work on these Spider-Man books, but I really loved Ryan Stegman's art on this. He draws such an interesting and cool looking old school Doc Ock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll have to give you that. I didn't mind his Doc Ock. I'm not a big Stegman fan on some things, superhero stuff, but this one, and also I'm going to give it leeway because it's, you know, the mental plane or whatever. Like I said, I don't know what you want to call it. So, you know, things are going to be distorted. Some of the buildings were shaped like, you know, they stretched and at the top they got wider, and I'm fine with that in this instant. And one of the things that I want to mention is I've seen, like you said, a lot of people online and they this and that. And my biggest gripe when people complain is the one that they say, oh, like Superior Spider-Man, Dan Slott's just doing it for shock value. I'm like, we're 9 issues in. We had 3 of Amazing Spider-Man. To me, at this point, it isn't shock value. It's a storyline and something
yes.
new. It's a storyline and something new. And granted, people go, oh, well, you know, he's just doing it for shock. It's going to go back to normal. Like, you guys love the old Spider-Man stuff. When he became the 6-armed Spider-Man, he went back to normal. This is the way comics are, and this is the way comics yes. will always be. Sorry, I had to go off on a little tirade there.
I can't even imagine what the internet would be like if it existed when he became the 6-armed Spider-Man.
Oh, or when he had the Spider-Mobile, or when Gwen Stacy died. Spoiler alert, when Gwen Stacy died. You know, it's just, it's the way things are. You know, that's what the letters page was for back then, and you could only fit like 8 letters on it, so.
So, yeah, I'm still with Superior Spider-Man. I don't think this is the end of one or the other characters. I think there's a lot more to that last page than just those last couple words he says.
Mm-hmm.
And I have faith in Dan Slott. I've enjoyed all of his stuff on Spider-Man since the beginning. And I'm with him for the long run.
Yep. I'm in for, you know, I'm in as long as it's fun.
And it is.
Yep.
So, moving on, if I can make the suggestion, did I do the same book?
I don't
twice
know.
In my notes. It looks like I did, but that's okay.
Let's talk about it twice.
No. The next book I want to mention is Swamp Thing number 20.
Yep.
This is the second of a 2-issue storyline, just kind of introducing the new status quo and the new creative team, writer Charles Soule, with art by Kano. And I think our retailer Dave said it best. He had tweeted the other day that if people left Swamp Thing after Scott Snyder left, you made a huge mistake, and I'd be hard-pressed to disagree with that statement.
I'm in the same boat. I think I might be one of the few that thinks in the past 2 issues that I like the book better than Scott Snyder's run. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I like a different take, you know, on Swamp Thing when he goes to Metropolis and he's trying to decide how to balance the, you know, the green telling him what to do, and Superman's gonna, you know, he wants to talk to Superman because he's, you know, amongst the men, the humans, and I think he did a great job of getting doing Superman's character. I really liked it. I liked the Scarecrow showing up. He was fantastic with what he was doing. All along, like, you know, inside he was fear toxin. You know, he's having these hallucinations were amazing. I think the book looks beautiful. I am just having so much fun reading Swamp Thing right now, especially after the rot. You know, like the rot, like I said, I think dragged on a little bit. But if you're not reading Swamp Thing, I think you should get on this issue and last issue and join the ride. Right.
And the penciler, of course, Kano being the penciler. Just the slight difference in his art for the dream sequences,
right,
I think adds so much to the book. The way he draws Swamp Thing is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And the only complaint I have about this book, the only complaint that I could have about this book, is the way that Charles Soule writes Superman.
You don't like it?
No, I like it, and it makes me want to check out the other Superman books, but I know that Superman's not like that in the other Superman books.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I hope you caught the amount of sadness in my voice with that. But yeah.
But this, I think this does a really good job. Like, even if you weren't reading the previous, you know, 20-some issues, 19, whatever it was, including the annuals and everything else like that, of Swamp Thing, or if you know Swamp Thing from the Alan Moore run or whatever run it is, I think these 2 issues are a great jumping in point. That's not going to be too much for you, and it's a new introduction. I know there's a beginning of a new character, a new villain perhaps as well. I think this is a really good book, and I'm very glad that I stuck with this.
Me too.
So I'll let you choose where we go to next, because we still got tons more to talk about.
Do you want to go with the it comes out the same week all the time as Animal Man?
Yes. Now, actually, Animal Man in the future, with some of the newer books coming out, it is getting moved to a 3rd-week book come this summer.
Oh, no.
Yes.
I like my Swamp Thing and Animal Man together.
I do, too, but you were just lamenting how the rot storyline kind of ruined, like, well, not so much as ruined, but you know what I mean, kind of dipped the quality. I'm glad that these 2 books are now being spread out since they're not as closely connected anymore.
True. I guess I can see your point. I'll concede that. It's one of the few that I'll give you. But this
story. Well, thank you.
You're very welcome, Leonard. This is the continuation of a story from I forget what issue early in the run. It was that Buddy Baker had been in a movie, and we saw the first part of the movie, and we're seeing the second part now. And as much as I love, you know, Animal Man before the rot, and like what's going on, and even during the rot, there was something about as I loved the story, the movie, as much as I love the Animal Man story.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost like it more because it's so cool and different and, like, you know, it's its own thing. And reading this, I thought this was a great two-parter as a story, and I would love to see more. And I love the revelation that we have at the end with everything that's been going on with his son. He gets the news about something after this movie, and I just thought it was brilliant. And the way, you know, he's thinking about his kid and everything. Just Animal Man has been great.
Yes, and it was back in issue 6 where we first saw Red Thunder as a character.
Mm-hmm.
It's even the same artist that they had there to still give it that same feel as though it's a continuation of that. And how it parallels Buddy's life both before and after. I think this is a really good issue. Animal Man's a real strong book, and I think it benefits from having Jeff Lemire on it. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see more Red Thunder in the future, based on what Todd mentions that happens at the end of this issue.
Mm-hmm. And I really want to see now Animal Man movies. I would like to see an Animal Man 1, which is like, you know, the story of Animal Man. Animal Man 2 would be Red Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
It would be Buddy Baker putting in the movie and then at the end asking people what they thought. And then an Animal Man 3. And it's kind of like a weird, you know, Oreo cookie of Animal Man.
I say go pitch that to Hollywood and see.
I bet you they're listening right now, and they are. It's one of my other schemes. It's one of my schemes I'm legendary for.
Right, exactly. The digital variants for the extra price and this.
Right. And I think the Walking Dead food maker, The Walk, was the other one.
That's terrible, actually.
I think that's a brilliant idea. But anyway.
So the next book that I think we're going to talk about is another Jeff Lemire book. And that's Green Arrow number 20, art by Andrea Sorrentino. I think this is the end of this current story arc, kind of wrapping things up and moving it along to get Ollie where he is at the beginning of these issues that we've seen over the last couple months since Lemire took the book over. What are your thoughts on this?
My thoughts is I never thought I would say I have two great Archer books, one from DC and one from Marvel, during the same week. But I'm really enjoying this. Sorrentino, I know I've probably said this before with iVampire, I think he makes everything look better. I love the look of this book. And I just like the interesting story. I'm not sure, like, everything that's happened, but I like the side character, the guy who's kind of his tech guy now, who drives around in a Chinese food delivery van. And, you know, they're trying to save his one friend who survived everything that started at the beginning of the book. I want to find out more without being, oh my God, he's made this too mysterious. I just think this is a great, fun book right now that, you know, they've just completely turned me around on Green Arrow as a monthly title.
And I'll kind of continue to echo those sentiments. I've always been a fan of Green Arrow, and he's kind of gotten the short shrift, if you ask me, of not having some of the best writers on there. And I'm a big fan of the classic look of Ollie, and I understand why this Ollie looks like the Oliver Queen that's on TV, and I completely understand. And I think they're making the best of it by having a book that is so well written and so beautiful on art.
Mm-hmm.
And as Todd mentioned, I have two books where it's an Archer character that are well written, have awesome art, but are so completely different.
That is, they are two completely different books. And that's really cool because you think you'd go down a lot of those same roads with rich Archers, but they're not. And I think that's awesome.
So I think this Lemire run began with issue 17. So you're not too far behind. You could probably still pick it up and, you know, you can get into this. And I don't watch the Green Arrow TV show, so I don't know if this parallels anything that's going on there. All I know is it's a good book.
I have no idea either. I haven't watched the Green Arrow show either. So, but it's a good book. I'm with you.
Yes. So one last book that both Todd and I read together, and then Todd will close things out with something he read. And the last one that we're going to talk about is Iron Man number 9, written by Kieran Gillen with art by Dale Eaglesham. It's a continuation of what's been going on in the last couple issues. Tony's still in space, and this is the beginning, the prelude, if you will, to the secret origin of Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm.
And you've probably seen that striking cover of the little tiny baby with the old school Iron Man helmet on.
Yep, the gray one that he wore in his first appearance.
Right, and I think that's such a cool, interesting cover. You know, so many times covers these days are just like random action shots or things that don't happen in the book, or they're not visually striking or they're not unique enough. I think if you, with Iron Man being out this past weekend, and this is the issue of Iron Man that was in the stores, I think if you went to the store and saw this on the cover, you'd have to pick the book up because it's just such a different looking thing on the cover.
Yeah, it stands out. Like you said, I'm the same way. I'm tired of what I call pin-up covers.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, they would have been pin-ups in the back. Now they're, you know, backgroundless pin-ups on the covers. But this, like you said, stands out immediately. He's got the little, you know, red and yellow booties on and a diaper and an Iron Man helmet. I think I'm going to open that book up and see what's inside.
Yeah, so this is essentially connecting, or at least leading us to believe that it's connecting what's been going on with Tony over the last couple of issues to his father.
Yes.
And I think that's not too spoilery since it's talking about his secret origin. And other than, you know, the classic Tony Stark is a millionaire, his dad worked on a bunch of tech stuff, there's a nebulous war depending on which Iron Man mythos you believe. He creates the Iron Man suit to save himself and then becomes a superhero. Now, how his origin is going to change, I'm very interested to see where that goes.
I am too, and I think Gillen's doing a wonderful job on this. He does something again that yanks the rug out from under me as I'm reading this,
mm-hmm.
and I never saw it coming, but it's you know, it was one of those that just and it's natural. That's the one thing that so far in the last issue, he's given me. I believe the term is swerve. I'm not quite sure. Pipe bomb,
yes.
But it was a swerve pipe bomb, and it when you get, it's natural. It feels natural, and I like that. It doesn't feel forced, and when we get to the last, you know, pages, and we're seeing what Tony's seeing, I'm like, I want next issue, and I want it now, and I'm actually kind of interested in on your ideas, because I think it looks beautiful, too. You probably like the art a little better, I'm going to guess.
Yes. Not only am I a, you know, I think, well, we remain positive on the show, but Dale Eaglesham, much, you know, known for his more recent run on Fantastic Four, but also his run on the Justice Society book, his art is awesome in this book, and a much welcome change from the previous artist, for me at least.
What? I will say, I know we differ on Land's art, and that's fine. But I do think Eaglesham's a better artist than Land, and I think it looks, you know, amazing. And he doesn't have that problem with faces, the manny faces that bothers you. So, but yeah,
there's a picture in the preview pages that I'll you know, that's included with the show notes as well, of Eaglesham's drawing of Death's Head.
Mm-hmm.
And man, is that just such a cool piece of art.
Yep. And I don't know much about Death's Head. I've never really read the character. So I don't know if, you know, he's always been that huge or what, but I think he's just, you know, a fun character that I'm learning more about.
Well, they kind of address that even in the book, because there was a time where he was just like a regular size, maybe like a little bit larger, like an 8 or 9 foot person.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was a Marvel UK story where Death's Head crossed over with Transformers, and he was as large as the Transformers.
Okay. I remember all those magazines, the Transformers and G.I. Joe UKs.
Right.
They were oversized and everything. I used to collect some of them, but I don't have any of them anymore.
So, yes, this is another great point. And to make you feel better, you had said you want to read more of this. With this month being in a larger month, Iron Man is onto a bi-monthly schedule for, like, I think the next 2 or 3 months.
as all Marvel Now books should be.
Yeah, sometimes three times a month even.
Or hourly even, it feels.
So the last book that Todd is going to talk about is 10 Grand from Image by J. Michael Straczynski and Ben Templesmith. Now, I will be completely honest with you. I know absolutely nothing about this book. So take it away.
Basically, this is a guy who he's a occultist for hire, like to solve your problems if there's some kind of like magical thing going on. And the title comes from 10 grand. That's what he charges. This girl comes in and says, you know, oh, here's, you know, 10 grand's a lot of money. He's like, no, 10 grand isn't a lot of money. 10 grand's just enough. Somebody who's really desperate can come up with 10 grand, 100 grand, 500 grand. That's a lot of money. But 10 grand keeps the kooks away. I don't have people showing up for like $100, which is easy to get. But then, you know, this girl shows up and she shows him this case, this picture, and he realizes that it's somebody who's part of his origin that I don't want to give too much away from, where he's like, okay, I got to look into this because this might be the person who created what I am now. And there's some twists and turns as to like why he was a bad, bad man and why he's changing his ways now to do good in the world. And I think I'm a big Straczynski fan when he's writing. We'll see if he finishes the story. That's one of the things that, you know, I have a knock on him, is he kind of runs away towards the end of a storyline. And Temple Smith's art I like, but occasionally it's kind of wonky. He does this real thin wrist, real like pancake flappy hands. That kind of is a weird thing when you see people like picking stuff up and stuff. But all in all, I like Ben Temple Smith's art. But I really enjoyed this book.
Well, that was going to be my, you know, many questions that I have about this is Ben Temple Smith is mostly known for doing a lot of the 30 Days of Night type stuff, the Cal McDonald mystery stuff from Dark Horse. And this is obviously more of a supernatural bend. So it does his art fit the story to you, I guess?
Yes, it does. It does. But his is another stylized art style that you have to get used to. But I think it fits perfectly. And I'm trying to think of a way to describe it. It's like John Constantine meets, I'm trying to think of because he's an old mafia guy who takes jobs now. So that's kind of the mix of what it is.
And then, of course, you know, you'd mentioned you're a fan of Straczynski. I myself was a fan of Straczynski as well, of course. I've kind of gotten away from him for some of his stuff, maybe some of his his interviews and his attitude toward the handling of a lot of stuff. You'd mentioned about how he doesn't much finish stories sometimes. He tends to shy away from them. You know, his reputation has kept me away from this, checking this out more than anything.
See, with me on stuff like that, you really have to be a bad guy where I'll take it into account of your work. And, you know, bad mouth, do this, do that. If you write a good story, I'll forgive you. There's very few people, and I don't think there's any in comics. I think it's more in a couple other mediums where I'm like, you're truly reprehensible. Gotcha. And I don't even mean like your work. I mean, you know, the stories that are, factual that you've done, I'm out, you know, so I'll give a guy a chance if I like the premise, and then if I like the story, I don't care what you do.
Well, it is a light week for me this week. Maybe if there's a couple other maybes that are on my pile, so we'll see what's in stock when I go to the store later today. So I think that wraps it up for what we read from last week.
Yeah.
Which was quite a bit. Thanks for hanging in with us. Let's move on to what we're both looking forward to this week. Now, will we continue the streak of having the same book in common?
I think we missed one 2 weeks ago, didn't we?
Oh, okay.
But hey, like four out of five in a row, that ain't bad.
No, it's not. So, you go first.
I'm going to go with one of the books that it seems like every time it comes out, it's on my list of things to... what I'm most looking forward to is Thor: God of Thunder 8. Did we strike fire again or no?
We did not.
Oh,
it was close. It would have made it if it was a I was lamenting with myself whether to put this on the list or not, but because it's part two of the storyline.
Mm-hmm. Is it Batman?
No. It's actually Batman and Red Hood number 20.
Okay.
The reason Batman and Red Hood number 20 is because this is the make it or break it issue for me, for Batman and Batman random family friend.
Mm-hmm.
I was dipping on the book a little bit. The annual and the post Death in the Family story really brought me back in. But there was something about the last issue that really just rubbed me the wrong way. I really didn't like that last issue.
The Frankenstein issue?
The Frankenstein issue.
I'm with you. I really didn't like the way that story laid out. I almost think Red Robin was, you know, an afterthought. I believe he was the one. He was an afterthought in the book. And just how crazy they've made Batman was too crazy for my tastes.
That's a perfect way to put it.
I understand grief, but that was just insanity.
Yes.
So, sorry. Go ahead.
So, yeah, just this is the make it or break it issue for me on Batman and Red Hood. This, I hope, is good.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
So you had mentioned about Thor God of Thunder number 8, a perennial favorite on this show.
Right.
Not much more else to say outside of that, I guess, huh?
No, just beautiful. just beautiful art, a great story. And I don't know, like, you know, because we kind of run over the same old ground occasionally. Like I said, just with Jason Aaron, you know, between Thanos. The thing that I like about Jason Aaron is just that he doesn't have a style. And I think that's a good thing. His, you know, scalped doesn't feel like his Thor. His Thor doesn't feel like his Thanos. His Thanos doesn't feel like his X-Men and the Wolverine that I read. He's a guy that he's going to slide on a book and do what he thinks fits that run. And I think right now he might be the best writer out there because of that.
Oh, boy. That's high praise, and I'd be hard-pressed to disagree with you.
It is. I mean, I think a lot of guys, like you said, Bendis, you know, we talk about Bendis. Bendis has a style. You write a, you go from one Bendis to the next Bendis book, and whether you like it or not, it's there. But Jason Aaron, I think he is the chameleon of comics right now. Not the character, you know, like the animal.
Right, I got you. So I'm with you on Thor, but for me, it's the make it or break it. It happens every now and then on the show, and, you know, the decision will be made next week because we're making it a point to talk about the books that we're recommending one week to the next.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because I really don't have a lot of make it or break it moments. It'll just be when I look at the table on Tuesday nights, I'm not getting that book and I'll just move down the line.
Yeah. No, I'll give it the one more shot, you know, you know me, I'm very, you're a much more impulsive person than I am where I'm more thought out and considerate, right. I guess.
Yep.
So just to so that's what we're looking forward to this week. Let's get into the sketches from last week.
Yes.
So we had a couple submissions, of course. Mr. Senior, of course, always sending in one that he does himself and a really cool Trigon from Teen Titans Go.
Yes.
And another longtime listener, Rick Williams, had put this up, and I guess it was last month or a month ago's issue, 2 months maybe, they did a sketch cover. It was the blank variant cover for Walking Dead, and he had an artist, Brian Kong, do a Carl sketch, and it's current Carl, you know, and it's really nice looking.
It's Pirate Carl.
Pirate Carl, there you go.
Yeah.
Another one that we had submitted was from another longtime listener, Ed Soto, who got a Hellblazer or a Hellboy by Art Balthasar that he got at the Reading Con. And unless he wasn't there on the same day we were, he should have come up to us. We were there all day Sunday.
True, but like you said, he might have been there Saturday. So
he might have been there Saturday. That's right. And I am the perennial slacker of Sketch Party Saturday. I haven't put one up in a while, but Todd is keeping the flag raised high. And he put up a page by Mike Zulli from the Last Temptation of Alice comic book from Marvel about Alice Cooper, written by Neil Gaiman. Is that correct?
Yes, it was.
And as always, with every one of Todd's sketches or pages or otherwise, he has always got a great story to go along with it.
Now, this story isn't in the buying it. It's in the in the having it. Basically, met Neil Gaiman years and years ago at the North Carolina Comic Con, I think is the Heroes Con, and got to meet him, got to talk to him. And now, obviously, Leonard knows I'm a huge Alice Cooper fan. You'd at least give me that, right?
Yes.
So I was like, oh, okay. So we have Michael Zulli, who's a great artist from Sandman, is working with Neil Gaiman, who at the time was, you know, my favorite writer, still is one of my favorite writers, writing a comic about working with a concept with Alice Cooper on the album and the comic, and they're, you know, working together. And I talked to him, and I'm going to give you my terrible Neil Gaiman, you know, impersonation. And I was like, oh, like, you know, it's just a dream to see you guys working together. And he's like, oh, Alice Cooper, he's such a nice guy, such a sweet gentleman, but he has an unhealthy addiction to Diet 7-Up. And I just found that amusing and blah, blah, blah. So years later, I go to a concert here in Scranton. Alice is there, and he has meet and greets. You can pay, you know, go and meet him. And I was like, I'm on this. There's not too many people in the world, you know, that I want to meet. So I go, I actually think I met your mother and your brother there at the concert. Looking back now. So they were jealous of me, which was awesome. And so I go in and I meet him, and he's a nice gentleman. I walk up to him. I'm like, hi, you know, I'm Todd Roker. He's like, ah, Todd Roker. I thought he knew me, but I told him my name. So that's why, you know, they know you, if you know what I mean. But so
you didn't have a deep connection?
No, we didn't have a deep connection, but we talked, and I brought the page with me, and he signed it. He's like, oh, yeah, I love this. I said, yeah, I told him the same story about how him and Neil working together, you know, is my two favorites working together, and how he had an unhealthy addiction. He told me he had an unhealthy addiction to Diet 7-Up. And I look, because the meet and greet was on his bus, and I look around, and there's just pyramids of Diet 7-Up. You know, like, and I was like, and, you know, Alice was being a cool guy, and he just goes, oh, he's one to talk. That freak who has to wear all black all the time, he's one to talk. And I'm like, this is so cool. And he was a nice guy. He let me eat off his cheese plate, and then I left. So that's my story. I hope it was a good one.
Now, I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah.
Rank them. You got to put them in order from favorite to least favorite.
Right.
The Raiders, Alice Cooper, Doctor Who.
Oh, my God. That's inhuman.
Rank them.
All right. Alice is coming in third.
Oh.
I know that might hurt your feelings. I'm going to go Doctor Who second.
Whoa, my goodness.
And the Raiders first. But I could swap Raiders and Doctor Who, because the Raiders have been on a 10-year losing streak, and Doctor Who's been on a 9-year, like a 6-year winning streak. So
okay.
So those flop depending on how they're doing.
Poor Alice getting the short shrift here.
Oh. Were you shocked by the answer, or did you think come close?
I thought Doctor Who would have been number one.
You know what? I've been a fan of Doctor Who longer, so I'm going to switch that around to one, Raiders 2, Alice Cooper 3.
There you go.
And tied with Alice Cooper, AC/DC. So it's a tough call. Just crazy today. It's crazy on here.
So I do want to mention, of course, all the places that you can find us online. Of course, we'll get to the Twitter question and next week's Twitter question as well. But do not forget to go to iTunes and leave us a rating there. 5 stars. You don't have to write anything. I'm going to hunt down the people who gave us the 1- and 2-star reviews and just ask them what's up.
Send Death's Head after them.
They didn't write reviews, because I'm all for constructive criticism, believe me. We do have some reviews up here recently. One from DarthMaul2_98. Where he says, thanks for a great show. I really enjoy the comic talk. You guys are very knowledgeable. Got my fingers crossed that Todd can get Leonard into Doctor Who. Keep crossing those fingers. You won't be disappointed, Leonard. Please keep the good work. And power bomb on. I think that was an incorrect usage of the word pipe bomb. I think he meant to say pipe bomb.
No, it's fine. I got the gist of it.
And another review, Jared Finelli mentions, by far my favorite comic podcast. Plus, I'm happy LFC has at least one co-host that shows up every week.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
I believe you were calling us the Iron Men of podcast the other day.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So, yes, I'm glad to have a podcast who, come heck or high water, hey, it will always be at my side.
Hey, we may fight about the show during New Comic Book Day.
Right.
And, you know, tooth and claw. But when it comes down to it, we're here every week. You got to give me that. I may not do the greatest job, but I'll not do the greatest job week in and week out.
No, so thanks for everyone who contributes in any way that you do, even if you just listen. You know, I'm kidding about, of course, making sure you go there. But if you're on iTunes and getting the show, you know, just click the little 5-star thing. You don't have to do anything else. You don't have to write anything. But if you want to write something, that makes us feel good inside as well. Of course, you can follow the show on Twitter, at Weekly Long Box. Get all the latest news and interactions with myself and Todd. But if you want that more personal touch, of course, you can follow Todd on Twitter at Roker the Joker. Excuse me. Again, I'm dying. I'm falling apart here. That's Roker, R-O-W-K-E-R, the Joker. I am L.F. Chikarason, and that is L-F-C-H-I-K-A-R-A-S-O-N on Twitter. And I am always on Twitter, even when I'm not actively posting. But I'm back, baby.
Oh, you're back?
Yes. I was tweeting up a storm the other day. I've been distracted. My mind's been elsewhere. But I'm back.
Oh, good. I was worried. I was really worried about you. I know that doesn't come through often, but heartfelt, ding, a single tear rolls down your cheek.
So, of course, Twitter is the main way to contribute to our weekly Twitter question. And last week's Twitter question was your favorite era of mutants, or your favorite X-Team, or anything that has mutants on it. And we got a lot of interesting choices.
People do love their X-Books.
Yes, they do. A lot of X-Factor love. Noel Margate, a longtime listener, mentioned the original X-Factor. And I love those costume designs from that that X-Factor redo from the 80s.
Mm-hmm. And can you imagine, like, we talk about the internet now and back then when they brought Jean Grey back?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. The internet would have exploded.
Todd Ingram 3 on Twitter mentioned the government sanctioned X Factor, which is, you know, your Havoc, your Polaris, your Strong Guy, that sort of group.
Mm-hmm.
And outside of the jackets, I was with that group. I liked it a lot.
Not a jacket guy, huh?
No, not a jacket guy. The Peter Milligan, Michael Allred X Force run was mentioned by John Seiler, and that was my number 2.
Wow.
Yes, my number 2. It was a close one. A lot of New Mutants love. I was very surprised to see that. Michael Hanskar, Urban Remnant, a new listener contributing to the thing, and another new listener, Trails End Wild, mentioned the pre-New Mutants Fallen Angels storyline. That New Mutants stuff, I don't know. Maybe, obviously, so many people like it. I didn't feel that the Bill Sienkiewicz art on it fit that book.
A little funny thing about the Bill Sienkiewicz art on New Mutants, that art is so funky and he does so many different things with it that they can't essential that because it doesn't work in black and white. Do you know what I mean? Like if you see all that and all that, like his artwork on there is busy, but that's why I don't think there's ever been an essential of that because they don't know how to make it work.
So the far and away winner, though, amongst our listeners was the 90s era, the Jim Lee, Chris Claremont X-Men, the blue and gold X-Men, if you will, maybe even the X-Men that you would know from the 90s cartoon. That was what was chosen by our listeners as their favorite era of mutants.
Yes.
And I'd say that's the era that got most people, I think, into, you know, it could be argued that the earlier Claremont stuff from the early 80s might have gotten more people in, but I think that probably got more people in, that 90s X-Men stuff.
I think it would have to, too. I mean, the Claremont Byrne stuff, you know, is classic and people love it. But I think even during the speculator market and people buying multiple copies, people were still reading the book, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was, a million copies that sold number one. So, like, you know, even if a quarter of that read it, that's ridiculous.
Yes, indeed.
So
all great suggestions. Thanks to everyone who contributed the Twitter question. However, none of these aforementioned ones were my choice. My choice was picked by someone, and that is by another longtime listener, Jared Catherine, who, with the new Twitter handle that I'm finally getting used to, of Accreta Man Dude, he had mentioned, and I'm not a huge X-Men reader myself. I haven't really gotten so much into the X-Men until the last couple years. So my favorite era of the mutants is the current Wolverine and the X-Men run by Jason Aaron.
Hmm. I would have picked that as yours.
You wouldn't have.
I would have.
Oh, you would have. See, I was the Milligan Allred X-Force X-Static stuff is really good. But because it's so different, it doesn't, like, to me, fit into the normal mythos of the mutants and the X-Men. It's kind of like its own thing.
Right, right.
So what was your choice for your favorite era of the mutants, X-Men type folk?
Mine was the current run of Peter David's X-Factor.
Ah, yes.
But mostly the early, like, before we went over to the renumbering of 200, when there was a very early time on it when it was like the Madrox mini, and then it went into X Factor, where the book was more noir-esque and it was like actual cases, like mysteries and stuff like that, and it didn't get into the grandiose like Sentinels and time travel until later. Some of those early issues were just the Madrox Detective Agency were so fun that that I just love them, and I can go back and read those again and again and again.
Now, you see, as much as I like those, and I do, I really felt that there was some House of M stuff that happened around that time that kind of took me out of what they were trying to do with that book.
Right, and that's one of the things, though. Like, I think it was House of M that was in there, but a lot of the otherwise, that didn't cross over a lot with a lot.
No, it didn't.
And I thought that helped a lot. So I could see how that could get you out, because that kind of stuff happened to me when he was on Young Justice, and they did the grown up storyline, and like where the
Sins of Youth,
the Sins of Youth.
Yes.
That, you know, when I came back from that, I was out of it. So, yeah, I could see on a Peter David book, sometimes it is hard to get back into the flow of things.
Right. So that's a good one of, well, I think I knew that was going to be yours. I know you're one of the biggest proponents of that X Factor book and have always been.
Yes. It's sad to see it go. That's kind of what, you know, was made me think up the question. I like to think up the question when I already have the answer.
I do that sometimes. You know, I think I've mentioned that before. That's usually how I do it, too.
It makes it easier. Makes it so much easier.
I reverse engineer the question.
Ah, good way of putting it.
Make it sound more important than it actually is.
You're a wordsmith, Chikarson.
So I do, again, thank everyone for contributing to last week's Twitter question. Now let's get into this week's Twitter question. And excuse me. Again, still working through some issues here. So we had a couple weeks ago, we had the episode where we asked you of who was the person that should not be on the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
The one person who, you know, just doesn't fit in with whatever the Avengers are doing. So let's do the DC side of that. And I worded it a little bit differently. Who is the shame of the Justice League?
Who?
When you look at different Justice League rosters over the year, who's the one person that you look at and you just shake your head in disgust? You're like, well, how did this person get on the Justice League?
Remember, nobody on the Keith Giffen to Maddie's Maguire Justice League counts as an answer.
That's correct. That's an immediate lifetime ban.
Yes.
From what, I don't know, but we'll figure out something to ban you from.
Yes.
So, yeah, just let us know who the one person in the Justice League that just makes you shake your head on how or why they're on the team. Throw the hashtag GrizzWLQ in there, and we'll compile up all the results, and we'll talk about them here next week.
Okay.
All righty. So, Todd, is there anything you'd like to close things out before we wrap up the show?
No, I think I've covered a lot of ground today.
We both certainly have. I'm going to go ahead and get this episode off to the proper authorities, and hopefully be able to fall asleep.
Well, I hope so, too. Get your beauty rest.
Yes, I need something today.
Yeah.
All right, so for Todd, this is Leonard closing out episode 77. I almost said 73. 77 of the Weekly Long Box. We will catch you all here next week.